Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Ukrainian Review podcast. I'm Adam from Ukrafut24, and a big thank you to Stell at Shoot the Defense for giving us the opportunity of spreading the word of all good things Ukrainian. Really happy to welcome back again Ray, the King of North Kiev. Ray, good evening.
Evening, everyone. The streets are cold, the stadiums are silent, but we are back with the latest on Ukrainian football.
It's great to have you. And Andrew from Zorya Lundansk, great to have you here with us again today.
Good evening, if anything. Good evening, everyone.
it is getting to evening now. And I'd like to welcome special guest joining us from Australia this evening, or this morning as it is down there. Danny, great to have you.
This morning, yep.
Great to have you with us, Danny. Apologies
for inviting me. Good morning. 6 a.m. in Melbourne. Beautiful day ahead, so good to be on board.
Great to have you out of bed this early. Touching with you real soon. Andrew, it's been a busy week of football, so let's dive straight in with good old Dinamo. How have they been getting on?
Yep, so they are still top of the UPL after 8 games. Halloween weekend didn't throw too many sort of tricks in terms of the actual results for them. They beat Dnipro 2-1 at home. Bit of a strange game, really poor weather, slightly, you know, intensity started lacking towards the end of the game, but all the action was in the first half mainly. Tricky winger from Dnipro 1's point of view. Nazarenko scored a sort of a Yarmolenko-esque goal. Came in from the right and then piled it top bins against debutant Nesjeret, who was in goal, 19-year-old keeper. In goal on his senior debut for Dynamo because Dynamo's other two goalkeepers tested COVID positive in the past week. So they're out for the next fortnight. And they've had to call on their third choice. He didn't have a too bad game, to be honest. Apart from that, which, I mean, most keepers wouldn't have much chance saving. He was relatively okay. After that, not much was happening up until that goal. Then Dynamo started turning the style on. Tsakhnov, the catalyst in everything, in all their good attacks, put in a sort of a lofted cross, which had a deflection on it. Adam Yuk, centre-back for Dnipro 1, headed it into his own net, 1-1. And then Shepelev took a shot later, about 5-10 minutes later, passed to Bujalski. He squared it and Tsakhnov curled it past the keeper. He got a hand to it, but went in still. Second half, pretty dire, I'm not going to lie, in terms of football. Dynamo had their chances, but overall, you know, it was a job well done. Hard-fought win and on to sort of the next two big key fixtures against Barca and Shakhtar.
And how did they get on last week in the UCL?
Well, unfortunately, they lived up to my favourite phrase. You know what they say about 2-0? The most dangerous scoreline in football. Dynamo had quite a solid first half. Went 2-0 up to Tsakhnov and Depena with a penalty and a nice finish. And then it sort of all went south a bit in the second half. Dynamo, I think, were slightly too comfortable, weren't really pressing enough going forward in terms of concrete chances. And Zahir Brov inspired his team to an amazing comeback in terms of Nguyen, and then Boli scored after Sidorchuk got a second, sort of a pointless second yellow, sent off on 86 minutes, and Ferencvaros equalised in the 90th. So, yeah, all to play for in that final group game in December between these two. Probably who we're going to see who finishes third for the Europa League spots.
Yeah, thank you for that, Andrew. Danny, now, you're here for a special reason, obviously, today. We've asked you to come along. You've been a big fan of Lucescu throughout his career. Do you want to just let our listeners know a little bit about your background and your interest in Lucescu's Dinamo in particular?
Well, being born in Romania 43 years ago, and then I think Lucescu was one of the coaches that stood out for me as what he achieved in his career. So I followed his pathway pretty closely in the last, since I was, I think, 13 or 14. about myself, I'm currently the senior coach in MPL 1 Victoria, which is one pretty much Division 2. I've been living here for the last 24 years, away from the European football. Very hard to watch European football at 2, 3, 4 in the morning every day. That's about it for me.
Yeah, and how do you think of Lucescu's performance so far with Dinamo? You've been happy with his style of play coming through?
It's very hard to watch the Ukrainian league up here in Australia. So I've spent a couple of hours trying to find a couple of highlights. I didn't get a chance to watch a full game, but going back on the last two games that I watched with Ferencvaros and Dnipro last weekend, I'm actually quite surprised. Very young side. Typical Lucescu, he will build a squad. Doesn't matter what you give him, if you give him the patience and the time, he will build a side, which is done throughout his career everywhere he went. So they're a young side, obviously, and they play pretty good football. They're very attacking minded. They don't like to sit back and play an ugly style of football. They play very, very offensively. Some very quality young boys in that team that obviously is continuing and giving credit to the one of the best junior academies in the world, which Dinamo Kiev has always produced superstar players since I can remember. So growing up with the team in the 80s that was dominating Europe, and then with Shevchenko and Rebrov's generation, and now this is probably the next one to come under him.
Were you surprised when Lucescu chose to come back to Kiev after his time in Donetsk with Shakhtar?
Oh, very controversial. If you look at what he did at Shakhtar in 12 years that he's been there, to win 8 titles, he was very vocal against Dinamo Kiev at stages, accusing him of, you know, having support from the referees and the federation. So he was probably public enemy number one in Kiev in terms of not a really loved person. And I was watching an interview with him before he went to Kiev, and he was looking for a challenge, you know, something new, because he's 73, I think, or something like that, his age, or around there. So you think, you know, a lot of coaches wouldn't want to coach anymore, but I think this is a massive challenge for him as a coach. And as controversial as he seems, the guy is a professional. He will do everything for this club to make sure that they will win every trophy that's on the line. Don't forget, he had the same issue in Turkey when he was coaching Galatasaray, and after winning the championship, they let him go, and he went to Beşiktaş, major rival, and the first year he won the title with him. So he's not there just for a you know, retirement package. I think he's going to do really well with Kiev, and the supporters will forget him eventually.
We can only hope. Do you see him running for president of US after this? I mean, it seems to be getting into that age of his life.
In Romania.
Oh, yeah. it's getting, he could be heading that way in the future. Yeah, but what was that the sort of general feeling, Romania, when he came here? Was the surprise that he took on another challenge? And as you say, he's getting into his 70s now.
Yeah, look, it was very surprising because him being at Shakhtar, you know, like everybody in Romania started looking at Shakhtar Donetsk, you know, because, you know, there was Romanian players there. He was coaching. The massive thing was when Shakhtar played Rapid Bucharest and he ended up coaching against his son. And that was a big, big thing. I think back in Romania, the TV stations were all over the event, father and son coaching against each other. The young one ended up beating him. So I don't think the discussion in the family would have been too friendly after that. But yeah, look, I think he did the right thing. From the interview that I've seen him, I think he had a good discussion with Shakhtar's owner, which is Rinat something. I forgot his surname.
Akhmetov,
yeah, that's it. So he done the right thing. You know, he obviously he didn't go to Kiev just to take it out on Shakhtar. I think he spent a couple of years away from Donetsk before returning to Kiev. So, like I said, look, I think it's a controversial move for Kiev, but eventually he's one coach that will build another probably legacy, given if he's given the time.
Thank you for that. Thanks, Danny. I think we enjoyed listening to that. Andrew was nodding along and laughing at a couple of the comments about the ultras. Hopefully, eventually, will forgive him. We saw a few banners pop up outside.
Which is expected anyway. You know, Kiev supporters are very passionate. You bring the rival coach, you know, especially after his declarations that he was making while he was at Donetsk against Kiev. And of course, they're not going to forget him. He needs to earn his loyalty in front of them. So,
now, I don't know if you're aware of this, but on Twitter now, there's a bit of a movement ever since the Super Cup game where he had the towel on his head and was starting to see pictures pop up across Twitter land of supporters wearing towels on their head in honour of the man.
Look, don't forget, Mircea Lucescu is a great person as well. He's not only a great coach, he's a great person. He's going to be a massive mentor to these young players that he's got in his squad. So eventually the supporters will forget him for being at Shakhtar for so long.
Andrew, I see you nodding along now. I'm going to ask you to come join in here. What has your take been on Lucescu over the first couple of months that he's been at the club?
Well, I'd say at the very start, obviously there was a lot of caginess. Why is he coming back? He hadn't really done much with his previous jobs after leaving Shakhtar. There's a bit of skepticism as well. However, I mean, I know not all fans, that's for sure. I know quite a lot of ultras who probably will never accept him just from their principles. But I know that obviously more of the, average supporter in terms of, you know, just the maybe the less diehards are already sort of more are warming to him. As Adam said, with the, you know, the memes and all that other stuff. And they're sort of happy with how he's, you know, been tasked with not much of a budget. So in terms of that, so he can't bring in any Brazilians or anything like that. He's been forced to sort of use the youth squad that he's had at his disposal. He's also had a load of sort of injury problems to deal with defensively. So he's brought in some academy products up, which have also gone on to make their debuts for Ukraine and had an influence when Ukraine beat Spain 1-0 in terms of that defensive setup. Similarly, you know, they've been producing quite good results. They've qualified for the Champions League for the first time in, 4 years after, you know, missing out in the qualifying rounds. So, yeah, progress has definitely been made. I think the only question is that will they be able to sort of continue this throughout the season? Because as we've already seen, you know, there was that drop off in the second half against Ferencváros. There was sort of already calls about slightly skepticism about his tactics, as in he made a mistake there in terms of he didn't bring any subs on until like right at the end, and they end up being slightly detrimental to the actual end result. So I think we'll probably need to see until the winter break how Dinamo get along. I mean, if they don't make the Europa League, that third place spot, and I mean probably drop behind Shakhtar, which they're currently, I think, 4 points ahead of, then obviously there'll be cause for concern. But so far, I guess from like just a neutral standpoint, you know, top of the league and, you know, got every chance of qualifying for the Europa League still. So can't really say too much wrong about him just yet.
I forgot to unmute myself, as I always do. Apologies there. Ray, I'm going to ask you to unmute yourself as well here, because we've got El Clasico, the Ukrainian version, coming up this weekend. And how have Shakhtar been warming up for it over the last week?
Controversially, as it may seem, because previously, if you recall, we've discussed Shakhtar quite a bit. And we were not optimistic about them. We predicted quite a downfall for them as they were struggling in the beginning of the season with this short break between the last and this season. But there you go. They are on top of their Champions League group, at least after two games played. They've beaten Real Madrid in their home ground. A 13-time European Cup winner. It didn't mean nothing to them, to the youngsters of Shakhtar, which had to play instead of their usual Stepanenko and Pyatov and a couple of other guys who had to go to isolation because of COVID, but they're fine now. And they came back for next game with Inter, which Shakhtar drew 0-0. And for me, it was a great game. Decent quality of football by Shakhtar standards. They Castro, their manager, really changed his philosophy for this one, especially after the 5-0 defeat in the Europa League semifinal a couple of months earlier. That was awesome. And it's like, you know, Phoenix a resurrection, so to speak. And it's nice. And all the best to him. I mean, it's all in their hands now. If we discuss their championship away, well, last game with Mariupol, sure, we know this reputation of the game is basically two similar teams playing. 13 Mariupol players weren't able to play, not because of COVID, but because they are loaned out by Shakhtar. And that's the rule, the unique rule of Ukrainian football, when the loanees of your team have to play against you, they don't. They never do. And take it or leave it. So, Shakhtar won 3-1, obviously. Some of the youngsters were called upon, like Bakula, Sudakov, and Bunik. Sudakov also debuted before in Champions League, which is great for him, for his future experience. A couple of names popped up in the Mariupol squad as well. I actually had high hopes for this match, as I like the way they play nowadays. I hope they at least battle for it. But the likes of Mamrosenko, Viskrebennikov, and Plaksa, don't mind those endangered species of Ukrainian football. You might never hear of or see them again ever in Premier League. So keep your eyes peeled. But that's how it goes. And we'll be expecting more from Mariupol in future. And we're expecting Kosicina as well. Huge match. And, I would put my bets on Dinamo in this one, as well as before in Super Cup, which they won. I would say that Shakhtar would go along their way in Champions League, because it's just more to take.
I agree with you. Thank you there, Ray. Andrew, are Dinamo going to be facing a different Shakhtar team to the one they faced in the Super Cup this weekend?
I'd say so. Yeah, that the team they faced in the Super Cup felt, I think, was still lagging and tired from the season before. They just finished the Europa League a few weeks before that. You know, I don't think they were 100% certain in where they were going either. And now, you know, thanks to COVID, Castro has been given this sort of, you know, blessing in terms of he's been given the chance to show all his younger players out. And in that sense, they've been performing a lot better than his regular seniors. So I guess it will depend on the team that he plays, but I'm going to think it's going to be sort of a mix between the new guys. Tete is probably going to start. Solomon gets a go. And then with a bit of a mix of the old guard, because now it's actually with Shakhtar, they've got all their players back from COVID and technically they're more or less full strength. Whereas it's actually going the other way for Dynamo. Dynamo over the past week, they've had have had a number of increasing COVID cases. Jorge Bustran, the first choice keeper, went out. Dennis Boyko also went out after the Ferencváros game. Vitali Mykolenko, their first choice left back's out. And just this weekend, Karavayev's out, Shaparenko's out, Tudor Baluta new signings out, and a couple of others who you wouldn't expect to start. But yeah, so it looks like the role reversal. So maybe my confidence is nowhere near as high in terms of a Dynamo good performance against Shakhtar, just due to circumstances. I'm just going to call it quits in terms of, say, quite a boring draw.
Well, I'm hoping it's not going to be a boring draw, personally. I'm going to go a bit more extreme than you here and say that the youngsters coming through at Shakhtar are bloody brilliant. You know, they have some real good optimism there for the future. Sudikov, what a talent he's looking to be. I was having a talk with one of Shakhtar's youth coaches just last week, and they've got real big hopes for that boy. They say he's the strongest prospect coming through from the youths. But I really hope, I know you said you see some of the old guard coming back in as kind of a mix, but I would really love to see how they stand up against even an understrength Dynamo team. And it's going to be behind closed doors, so they're not going to have the crowds to deal with, which may be a blessing for them starting off their careers. But it'd be great to see what they can do. So I hope Castro does give them a chance. No idea how the game's going to go. You can never tell in games like this. There's going to be one decision either way. It could be a VAR. I don't know who's refereeing the game yet either. And I'm sure some of the boys listening will definitely say Monzel's on the pitch, then it's a Shakhtar win. But it'll probably be one goal either way. I'm going to say it won't be a draw, though. That's going to be my call. We'll definitely see a victory. Danny, have you got any feelings on the match coming up this weekend? Do you see Luchescu pulling off a masterclass?
It's going to get tested. A lot of, like you guys said, there's a lot of players missing. And look, it's a derby. Anything can happen. He strives probably on games like this. He's already beaten them in the Super Cup. So he's riding on a good result in a Super Cup already, you know. It's a bit of a surprise who's coaching Shakhtar. Just looking in, he's hasn't been at any clubs. He's just worked out his way through the youth system, I think, at Porto and in Portugal. But that could be his chance of beating one of the legends of the Ukrainian, you know, football coaching, whatever you want to call it. So I don't know. It's a tricky one. I've watched Shakhtar as well. When they play with the kids, they're actually fun to watch. They're very entertaining as well. So I reckon there'll be a few goals in it. Maybe a 3-2 to Dynamo, I think. just to make it more interesting.
Well, if it is, will you be up at like 4 a.m. to watch it, or will you skip it?
I wouldn't mind watching this game. I don't think I can find the link. I'll have to search the net to find the link for the to watch the game.
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll send you one afterwards. We'll send you one afterwards.
That would be good. I wouldn't mind watching it.
Okay.
It's a pity there's no crowd, but so that would have been make it more interesting.
Really is. I mean, you obviously, you coach the youngsters and you've had experience of coaching. Do you think it's helping the Shakhtar younger players kind of embed themselves at such a level playing behind closed doors?
Yeah, maybe because the pressure won't be there from the crowd. Like you go to Dynamo Kiev, you're gonna encounter a hostile crowd that can test your strength, your mental strength. You know, you're playing against the biggest club in Ukraine. But on the other hand, you want the kids to have that experience because you know what, you can see where they at. Mentally, if they're ready for these type of games, because if you don't, it doesn't matter what the coach will tell you or how much training you do. If you're gonna crumble in games like this, you're never gonna be a good player. So it's a good opportunity they can play in it, but not having the crowd there, it's a tricky one. I prefer them to be tested when it's like when you go to a hostile environment and see how they can handle it.
Oh, thanks for that. Now, moving on, of course, Ukrainian football isn't just Dynamo and Shakhtar as much as people want us to believe. And we have got a third representative in Europe this season, the mighty Zarya Lugansk. I was going to say Zarya Lugansk there, Andrew. Obviously, you're conquering Europe this year. But, they kind of flattering to deceive, aren't they, at the moment, guys? We've seen it's a very typical performance from them this Sunday. They were the late game on Sunday night. They were supposed to travel up to Kirovograd region to take on Ingolets. But Ingolets finally offered to play the game in Zaporizhia so that Zarya could cut back on their travel time to prepare for their Europa League game, kind of a friendly gesture, and I think Zarya repaid the gesture with a less than impressive performance in the 1-0 draw on Sunday night. I went back through the game afterwards, and I noticed there was only two shots on target in the entire match, and both teams, they did have a fair few shots, but it's that lack of a killer ball, shall we say, lack of a decent ball coming into the box. That is really costing Zarya. And even when it gets there, Lackey or whoever else it goes to tends to mess it up on more times than not. There was a disallowed goal for Zarya in the first half, which was rightly called offside. But of course, they had to go to VAR to confirm it, which adds a bit of controversy. But in my chat, I thought it was a fair choice. But then in the second half, we had the big penalty fiasco, controversy. Personal opinion, I think the right decision was made in the end. It did look like a penalty from the angle I saw. And it's one of those, you know, I think you could talk to 100 pros and they would say that the goalie was harshly done by with the save, the first one. I do believe it was for coming off the line. He retook it, and then I've put the second in at the second attempt to get the game back to one apiece. I was watching another game recently from England where the goalie had done exactly the same thing and saved it, and the game just carried on. So, yeah, Ingolets were probably quite harshly done by there. Now, Ray, I know you mentioned about the Mariupol loan easel not being allowed to play, but Ingolets were allowed to play their loney, Yankov. Zarya, for whatever reason, gave him permission to play, and of course he smashed in an impressive free kick from 20-odd yards into the top corner to give Ingolets the lead. It was an absolute fantastic set piece, really did. He didn't want to celebrate afterwards, of course, because I think coming back to Zorya at the end of the season might put him in a difficult position. It was a similar sort of story last Thursday in the Braga game as well, wasn't it? But whereas Zorya had a hell of a lot of chances, but they're all from the edge of the box. And despite shooting all night long, they finally got one in the 94th minute. Sadly, of course, Braga were 2-0 up early on. And again, that kind of golfing class, that especially up front. I know we've spoken a lot here about Kotchin, being sort of the key player, but I just want to mention briefly how Kabayev seems to have really fallen off. We've not seen him do anything at the moment. It'd be great to see him step up in class a little bit over the next month. And particularly because my fantasy football team could do with a few points from him, but we won't go into that. I was talking actually today with a couple of the players, and I was obviously at Ingolets, they were very happy with the point. But I was more surprised that Zorya were not as upset by being held to a point. There was kind of a shrug of the shoulders I got from them when I was talking to them today. And they said, well, that's football. Never mind. We'll move on. So, yeah, that was it. Did anybody else have to suffer that game on Sunday night? It wasn't a classic, was it? Andrew, Ray, did you see it? No, I think that is a category no. Well, shall we move on quickly anyway? Because, Andrew, I know we had a bit of a shock that you watched on Sunday, didn't you, over in Western Ukraine. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yep. The UPL surprise package, Vorskla have finally lost their first game of the season. No longer flying so high after losing to bottom of the... to be honest, Vorskla tried to sort of press on it, try and get the goals in, but nothing was coming off. Inform forward Kulach went off after 22 minutes, so it's just already bad luck. Adam laughing there because we both had him as our captain in the fantasy football, so that's sod's law. And Nitch, who's been shooting left, right and centre for FC Lviv all season long, finally hit the target and got the only goal of the game. Quite poor defending. He glided past about four or five players, relatively unchallenged, finished. Maybe you could call it a new manager bounce because Tsitashvili resigned / left last week for the bottom side club. And Shumsky took over. I think he's just in sort of the caretaker role at the moment. I heard Oleg Luzhny's being lined up potentially as a replacement, but who knows? And I mean, they got the win. They released a few random players as well in the past week, which gave Kostic a great debut and goal. Saved a 97th minute penalty from Vorskla. Sometimes you say, oh, there's these controversial penalties and that sort of thing. But I mean, it looked like handball to me. There was 7 minutes of added time and it was in the 96th minute. So, you know, fair enough. And Kane took an absolute awful penalty. And yeah, that sort of sums him up. He's great in short doses, but I mean, I think when it actually matters the most, he sometimes bottles it. Like either gets a stupid red card or just doesn't finish when need to. But yeah, so Vorskla, I think, to third. And I guess we'll see whether that will be a sort of a continual drop because we didn't expect them to play at that intensity for the whole season and stay up there. But I guess we'll see how Maximov's men sort of come back from that.
I agree. And of course, we've got added eyes now on Vorskla with their signing of their first ever Englishman, who we are desperately trying to get in touch with, but we'll hopefully have words with him over the next few weeks. So, of course, Andrew, you got to, not Andrew, Andre, Ray, you got to watch a really exciting game this weekend down in Western Ukraine in the deep southwest there. How did it go between the two newly promoted teams?
As comments on YouTube go, who on earth would pick Aston Villa Southampton instead of this thriller? Minai Rukh nil-nil draw between the new teams in Premier League this season. Western Derby, after this match, the Minai Ultras decided to boycott and not visit any more games of Minai, as they did not pay, and the footballers didn't pay any attention to them after any game. So, well, it's kind of scandalous, if you ask me. But these teams are going to finish right there as they stand. 13 and 14th places in the league. That's how it stands. I mean, there's nothing else happening. They will stay in the league, but they won't succeed, as we saw in this game. Apparently, someone picked that instead of Premier League, English Premier League games. But yeah, there you go.
Well, thank you. I've got to say thank you for watching it for us. Yeah. You deserve a medal for going through that one. I was a lot happier with my game that I watched over in Kirovograd, Alexandria against Desna. That was a slightly more exciting affair. Sort of tale of two halves, that match, wasn't it? Played in atrocious conditions. Fair play to the guys for putting on a decent passing game of football. In the first half, Desna absolutely dominated. They had 61% of the possession in the first half, had a whole load of shots on goal, and went in 1-0. Could have been more, I would say. There were definitely, I think it was Totovsky. I apologise if I pronounce his name wrong. Andrew, feel free to dive in and pulverise me for my atrocious names. He hit the post as well before scoring the penalty, and that was a great chance for Desna to go 1-0 up at that stage before the penalty. The penalty was a little bit controversial. I looked at it a fair few times. I'm going to put my trust in Panoplia, because he's always seemed like an honest player, and there was some sort of contact there. Now, whether it was a foul is questionable, but I don't think he went down deliberately. It may have been momentum that took over for the penalty, but it was a very, very tight decision against Alexandria there. It was, in general, though, I thought it was one of Konoplya's quieter games for Desna since he's gone back on loan this season. Normally he's a lot more active than that. The second half, Alexandria, great tactical decisions at the start of the half. They changed shape. They went to four at the back instead of five, put another guy up further up the field, and it really helped them get back into the game. The shot count swung violently in the other direction. 8-4 in the second half to Alexandria. They went up after about an hour, they're up to 69% of the possession as well, showing a real sort of iron grip they had on the game. Interestingly, though, Desna had a real good chance to pull it 2-0. Shvetsov had a header where, you know, it's one of these in the 6-yard box, only the goalie to beat, and he actually headed it away from the goal instead of towards the goal, which was quite surprising. Sorry, guys, I know I'm rattling on here a bit, but I'm getting to the end soon. Then, of course, Alexandria got two good goals there, Bernardo and Sitalo, later on to jump up 2-1 in the lead before Budkivsky got a late equaliser. The action didn't end there, of course. We had a red card for a very weak second yellow for Imenikov. I didn't think it was deserving of a booking, but the referee did towards the end of the game there. It was just a loose arm from a jump, and caught the Alexandria guy. I didn't quite see who it was who he caught, but I think it was a very unfair decision, shall we say. I did have a look, as I always do, and I always promise to, but Mudrick, one of his quieter games after the promise of the game last week. he was a little bit more subdued, played a bit longer. He's up to 75 minutes now of game time, which he's getting up to a full 90 minutes. Little by little, he's getting there. 100% success rate on his dribbles as well, but his passing was abysmal. I've got to say, it was really was. He turned over the ball way too much, and I'm sure Ribakin won't be happy with that. But I don't know what's going on there, but I'm pretty sure Shakhtar have said they want him starting quite regularly over the next few weeks. So I'm sure he'll be starting again this weekend and given another chance to prove himself. Now, where are we up to? We're up to the final game, aren't we? Kolos Olympic. Who had the pleasure of that one? Ray is putting his hands up for you all at home. Go on then, Ray.
Yeah, match played at challenging conditions in Kyiv Oblast, a quite wet pitch, and it resulted in a battling contest and the first defeat of Kolos in their new, lovely, new small arena. They've recovered with a penalty from Selezno, which results in one more goal on his way of the record of all-time goal-scoring record of the league. Olympic played really well. Benito, a loanee from Dinamo, scored, celebrated really emotionally this one. Good goal. But you have to give credit to Kusharuk, who is recently a Kolos keeper. He started this game and he pulled off a few marvelous saves. Unbelievable from the basically point-blank range from Zahidi, whatever. He scored as well. He's a great lad from Olympics, promising striker. And he gave the win. He secured the win for Olympic and good result for them. Kolos should be careful about their position in the top league if they want to stay there. I'm not sure. We don't have any top six and lower six as we had last season, so I don't know what they're fighting for. They might even result in 10th position on top of Minai, Ingolets and Ruch. They're all of them promoted this season from the first league, and maybe they'll just keep their friendly company in there. I don't know. But if Olympic converts their chances as they did in this game with the help of their foreigners, Teixeira, Shahidi, Benito, and Kargbo Jr. even, they can play decent football. And it's a good sight to see. However, their fans are funny crew as well, as we know. I mean, the Olympic fans, they're as legendary as Minai Ultras, I would say.
I'm just going to ask you a quick question, because I was having a conversation with someone today who's a good friend of Shahab Zahidi, and he was saying that the previous coach, Vicente, there really injected a lot of confidence just before he left. There was a lot of confidence put into the team, and they really expressed this freedom to play. And is that something that you saw on the pitch this weekend, this kind of freedom of expression, not restricted by sort of traditional tactics that we see in the Ukrainian league?
Yeah, it's funny for the recent days to see teams like Mariupol and Olympic showing really good football. It's and you wonder if it's a reason of managers like Klimovsky. He seems like a caretaker, like Shumsky and FC Lviv. But it seems to work for them. And surely Vicente was a quality coach. Shame he resigned in the end, and now Klimovsky is in charge. But I would say their confidence, and it's really fun to watch those middle class teams who used to never fight for anything, never pretend on any, high results and glorious victories. But there we go. It's intriguing, to say the least.
Now, before you go, Ray, we had a question pop up on Twitter about your beloved Obolon this week. Obviously, they've not had the greatest start to the season. What are the hopes there now for a successful year? Are you still targeting the top of the table, or are you going to settle for a rebuild job?
Definitely targeting. Lack of stability these days, as we can give away the points to Crystal, who are the last in the league, and they didn't have any points before that. But we are the Robin Hoods, and there you go. And the next day, we beat Metalist 1925 in their own ground. And they let us play on some training pitch with no lights and no cameras, and that's what you get, guys. Like, honestly. And you could see the emotion of our captain, a left back playing number 10, scoring the decisive goal, and you can see that emotion, and you can see our veteran striker shooting both of the posts with one shot, and you can see the expression of his face. I mean, that's the match to remember. There are plenty of these in Obulon history, and it's plenty to come, but the stability is what we are looking for.
Fair enough. Thanks for that. How are the other games in the Persia this week, right?
Yeah, we're looking at the game with Allianz this week. A team, honestly, I would say I really root for them, apart from Obulon, of course, like from a neutral point of view. Because if you even look at the broadcast on YouTube, like find the highlights of their last game with Unix Sport, which they lost, but they have the cinematics of Champions League seasons of previous years. I mean, it's a lovely thing to see. It's Special Liga, and you know it, and it's all in Ukrainian, but you can see the graphics are taken directly from Champions League. It's such a nice touch. And there was a great game as well. The Hirnik Sport forward just chipping the keeper from the bar. It's a great goal. Shame Allianz lost, but the more angry they get for Obulon, the better. And they really have some financial backing behind them, and they're the ones who really build up the marketing and structure of the club really neatly. They have those new lovely kids, and it's just, you know, when some club is being managed with soul, it shows, and they have this lovely stadium in Sumy, and there's going to be a great game, and I would really like to see more of them in Persha Liga. One more game which caught my attention was VPK Agro, one more agricultural team from Persha Liga, the newcomers, the freshmen of the league. They lost to Polisa in Kiev. The game was played in Bannikova Stadium, which brought back some good memories from a few teams playing there, even including Shakhtar back in 5 years after the move from Donetsk. And there you go. You see Polisa playing VPK Agro in a dramatic match. Shame that VPK Agro goalkeeper has some, probably lack of form the second game in a row. He just falls down with no reason, let him the opponent strikers beating himself and scoring easy goals. Yeah, but overall, that was a good game. And you would say that the same thing with Olympic and Mariupol in Persha Liga, with VPK Agro and Allianz, that those middle-class teams which can beat anyone and anyone can beat them as they go along. And I would like to see more of such teams in our leagues, in our football in general.
Ah, thanks for that. Talking about agricultural teams, I watched the forefathers, shall we say, agro-business play at home. They got back to winning ways against what is a really disappointing Prikarpatia team this season. I don't think they're going to... I mean, they may end up in the bottom two. They looked that poor, but it was a very comfortable 3-0 home victory for agro-business that got them back into the winning groove and into the top half of the table. Velin. Oh, great Velin from Lutz. We're beaten at home by Avangard Kramatorsk. Kramatorsk started the day second from bottom. And very surprising 1-0 defeat for Velin. Saw them drop out of the promotion places and they were replaced by my dearly beloved Verez Rivna. For those of you who don't know, I do follow Verez quite quietly. I'm not going to sit on the fence with them. I do hope they go up this season for all the troubles they've been through in the past. But as Andre alluded to earlier with Christel's 3 points that they got against Obolon last week, they also ran Ferres very close down in Kherson. Ferres did go 2-0 up, but then they pulled it back. And it was a tight 3-2 win at the end there, but it was enough for Ferres to hold on and go into third spot behind Runic and Chawner Moretz. How did Chawner Moretz get on, Andrew?
Yep, comfortable 2-0 victory for them at home against Mykolaiv. The excellently named Artem Kovbasa with a brace. For those of you not too familiar from the Ukrainian language, Kovbasa is a Ukrainian sausage. So, yeah, and he's joint top scorer in the league with 5 goals, which, I mean, after 10 games, pretty poor goal scoring in the Persha for at the moment. Hopefully that picks up soon. Yeah, Mykolaiv didn't do much in that game. Pretty boring. And yeah, Chawner Moretz are top for now. But I mean, they've played 10 games and then the clubs below them all have at least a game or a few more in hand. And they're only a point above everyone else. So good stuff. That's going to be, you know, that's going to be going up and down over the next few weeks. However, a much more entertaining game was the final game that we're, you know, from the Persha Liha of the match day. And that was Nyva Ternopil against Kremin Kremenchuk. Kremin Kremenchuk had a sort of quite a quick start to the season. I think they were near the top, but they've recently dropped off. I think they've got Holovko, their head coach. And yeah, this was really weird because Nyva weren't playing in Ternopil Central Stadium. They were playing in some random park where at the end of one of the goals, there was like a jungle gym sort of castle thing behind one of the goals. So it was relatively weird. Loads of fans there in terms of, I think they were like actually in the stadium, but loads of shouting from the ultras and loads of like shouting from whoever was behind the camera as well. So that was entertaining. Some good goals in there. Nice one touch. Nice one touch chest finished to equalize it at the very end. And Jonathan Lima, the Brazilian who recently signed for Kremenchuk, scored a wonderful goal from the left side of the box, just curled it top bins. Good stuff, to be honest. And yeah, like we've already mentioned, you can watch all these games live for free on YouTube. Apart from maybe Chawner Moretz, I think they might be on football, but the majority of all the games are on the club's channels. So if you ever do want to give these a go, definitely go check them out on YouTube.
You can access them all through the PFL website. Well, I must remember, I'll put the links into the podcast when it goes live for people who want to watch the games on the website as well. It's a really, really interactive, easy to use website in English if you want it in English. And they'll give you kickoff times and everything for the games to watch with the links straight there into their live feeds. It was a rule brought in a couple of seasons ago by the previous marketing director. And yeah, we're all very thankful for her. You can even get the second division games, but we'll hold off on the second division for another time because we've got national team fixtures coming up, haven't we, Andrew, in the next few weeks. What's going to be happening with Zabina?
Well, it's a big November in terms of Nations League after Ukraine beat Spain 1-0 last month. They've got every chance of actually finishing top of this group if they win both of their remaining games and Spain slip up. Tough ask, but I mean, not the end of the world. However, all three of Ukraine's matches in November are away from home. Poland friendly, then a Germany Nations League game in Leipzig, and finally Switzerland in Luzern, which could, depending on how things go, end up as the relegation off. You just never know. This is a really tight Nations League group and, you know, difficult to call. One thing that probably is going to be certain and impactful this time again is it's Dynamo Kyiv's call up players who will be potentially missing. And we'll see how Shevchenko can adapt his squad this time round without a number of key players who probably would have started, potentially touch and go. Mykolenko, Karavayev, so that's two of his defence already. Shaparenko might have started in midfield, potentially. And Bushchan in goal. Looks like we might be seeing Pyatov back, but who knows?
Fingers crossed. Any predictions on how you think it's going to go, Andrew? Putting you on the spot, man.
It's a tough one. I mean, after that Spain game, you know, anything can happen.
Ride the positive wave. Go on.
I think it's been a little, well, we're going to have another podcast episode before the Switzerland game. So let's say everything will be riding on that final one when we go into it, in terms of Ukraine could be going into the Nations League finals.
Fingers crossed. Danny, I'm going to pick on you for a bit. Why not? First of all, where do you see Ukraine, you know, in the big picture of European football? Obviously, they've got the games coming up against Germany and Switzerland. How would you see those games panning out?
Look, it's a good test for them. What I think is the Ukrainian football will probably be one of the, from the East Europe, I think they got probably a couple of the best academies down there. And they will always produce, like they've never stopped producing. Yeah, they had a couple of years off, but then another generation came in, and in 2-3 years' time, they became a very good, strong national side. So from looking at the rest of East Europe, Romania is a mess. Bulgaria is not the same team for what, 20 years. They have done nothing apart from Croatia. I mean, Hungary is coming back into it a bit now. The rest of them are struggling, or they're rebuilding and it's taking forever. Shevchenko somehow has managed to. I mean, if you beat Spain, then you're doing something right. That's a massive win for Ukrainian national team.
And you got smiles all around you for that comment.
Yeah. And you got two teams in a Champions League. Now, if you're going to play those kids, regardless if they finish third or fourth, it's the experience they're going to gain in those, playing against your Real Madrids or Barcelona or whoever else is in their group. They're only going to get better. And then the inevitable is going to happen. Transfers to big clubs in Europe. They'll grow. They'll be a very strong national team in the next couple of years.
Yeah, thanks for that. All right. How do you see the games playing out?
So much football these days, Champions League, Premier League, Persia, you couldn't tell. And, you know, to change the channel in your mind to all those National League again, well, I'm always positive. I'm always optimistic. And I don't have any high hopes after Spain game, honestly, because I always believe in Ukraine. But yeah, it surely gives some more optimism, some boost. But those COVID cases, that you can have plenty of them coming up. So you never know. The opponents might have them as well. So Switzerland, they're all European teams. So some lockdown derbies we are coming up to. I don't know.
Definitely. I just ask you guys, before we finish tonight, what's your opinion on the Nations League? Obviously, we've seen Ukraine have got up to the top division. We've seen these matches over the last few months against Spain, Germany, Switzerland, be my bias coming through to a lesser extent. We've seen the Nations League as well prop up over in the Americas, in the North American region there. They have the Nations League. Danny, would you like to see the Nations League format crop up down in Asia? So Austria?
It's a tricky one here because you know, of the traveling, and it's going to be very hard to implement it on this side of the world, especially now with all these restrictions in traveling and lockdowns, and that you don't know what you're going to get in the next couple of years. But I think the Asian Confederation is trying to copy a lot and implement a lot that's happening in Europe, like you saw with the Champions League following in their footsteps, and who knows, they might do that. Look, it's better than having friendlies anyway, so at least you're playing for something, and it's got more meaning. And again, you know, your players will get more out of a game that's got something on the line rather than just a friendly.
Andrew, I saw you nodding there. Do you agree with that, Ben?
Yeah, absolutely. It's completely sort of revolutionised. Maybe not the bigger sides, like England. I know they've still got complaints about it. And some of the other ones where they still, you know, relatively win. But I mean, for the medium sort of smaller teams, for sure, it's, you know, giving them a boost of playing against like ability sides. Ukraine probably never had the opportunity to play against three top, you know, top 15 sides all at once, twice in a, you know, two games. So, I mean, yes, yeah, all positives in terms of like the building and preparation ahead of the Euros next year. Quick sort of news and rumours coming out of that. Apparently, UEFA are considering moving it to just one country, and apparently the favourite is Russia. So who knows where how that's going to end, but fingers crossed it's all a load of bollocks.
Fingers crossed. Cheers. Definitely. Agreed completely. That was hot off the press this evening, if I'm right as well. So hopefully it's just a bit of hearsay and the like, and panic over the growing restrictions coming out across Europe at the moment. That's it for tonight, isn't it, everyone? Unless I've forgotten something, feel free to chip in. I know we've got a special coming out this weekend, so make sure you're looking at the podcast listings for that. It's a special day for one of our regulars on the crew in particular, so we're looking forward to recording that later in the week. Danny, it's been great to have you with us tonight, mate. Thank God this took with us this morning as it is. Thanks for getting up early. We really do appreciate it. It's been great to sort of get your take on Lucescu's start to his Dinamo career. If people want to get in touch with you to talk a bit more about it, what's the best way they can contact you?
I think I'm on all social media, and thanks for having me, guys. Anyway, it's been a pleasure and fun. I think I'm on social media, and I spend a fair bit of time on it. There's so much information going on, games, comments, all these politics, whatever you want to do, but I tend to stick to football at the moment.
Good man. And Ray, how about you? The usual places.
Yeah, Instagram, Oblong Casual.
Fantastic. And Andrew?
Yep, Zoria Londonsk on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook.
And you can get me, Adam, at UKFoot24. Mainly find me on Twitter, I think, these days, more than Facebook. But you can also get me on Instagram at times. It's been great as always. I've really enjoyed it. I hope you guys have, and you at home enjoy listening to it. We'll be back with our regular podcast in 2 weeks' time, in the middle of all the international excitement that's going on. So till then, have a great couple of weeks, guys. Goodbye.